How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 7, an emergency podcast of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Head to normantranscript.com to get all your Thunder coverage there. You can find my blog, Thunder Road, that's under the sports tab on the site. And I'm sure you'll be looking for stuff on Kevin Durant. That's what we're talking about. Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors. And on to React is the internet's Jared Dubin. Jared, what up?
Not too much, man. I hope everybody that's listening to this is doing emotionally okay today. It's a tough day, obviously, but as someone who has been a fan of a very bad basketball team for a very long time, I can tell you things will be okay.
Yeah, Jared's one of my friends from New York, and Jared is a longtime Knicks fan. So I don't know, are things okay for the Knicks? You seem to be perennially stressed out.
Oh, things are not okay for the Knicks, but things are like okay for me personally.
Your self-worth is not based on the Knicks record.
No, look, things are never okay with the Knicks. Even if they get better at some point, you know, they're still not okay because they're the Knicks and that's what they do. But I can tell you, you know, a lot of people in New York do base their self-worth on whether or not the Knicks are good. I just don't happen to be one of them. It does affect my sanity quite a bit, but, you know, there are ways you can overcome that.
So let's get to the skinny of this. It's recording this Monday, a little bit before 2 p.m. Eastern time. I'm in Orlando. You're in New York right now, right?
I am in New York right now, yes.
So I'm in an Orlando hotel room, missing the first hour of the first Summer League game. Oh, the horror. How could I possibly miss that for all of this? In case you're unaware, Kevin Durant announced on the Players Tribune about 2 hours ago that he would sign with the Warriors for the upcoming season. ESPN's Mark Stein reported it would be a one-on-one deal, so he'll probably be a free agent again next year, assuming you know, something drastic doesn't happen and he doesn't have to pick up a player option for 2017 season. So we're going to go through this again next offseason as well, and you know, the Warriors are going to have to try to find a way to re-sign him without having his bird rights. Jared, what was your reaction when you first saw that he was signing with the Warriors a few hours ago?
My first reaction, can we curse on these podcasts?
I'd say let's steer clear of the cursing. But I think you've made your point.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, holy expletive was my initial reaction. Then, like, my secondary reaction was like, holy expletive-ing expletive. And then it was basically to, you know, take to Twitter and see what the other insanity was going on and see the takes, which are steaming, piping hot, obviously. You know, a lot of discussion about whether this is bad for the league. I am not of the mind that it is, because it's hard to think of something better for the league than, like, LeBron playing these guys in the finals for the next 2 years. Like,
it's not bad for the league. Anyone who says it's so the opposite of bad for the league. First of all,
it's bad for the Thunder, and it might be bad for, like, perception of star team-ups, but we saw how long that lasted when LeBron went to Miami. It lasts basically until opening night, and it becomes the most compelling story in the league.
I mean, to say that it's bad for the league, I think, completely ignores the fact any sort of attention on the league is good. Whether that's outrage, I mean, look, you don't want scandal, but whether that's outrage at a particular player or someone being happy with a player or someone being passionate, any sort of passion directed at the NBA, whether it's positive or negative passion, you know, there are certain types of things that generate disinterest. You know, Donaghy generates disinterest. That's the scandal you don't want. But anything that directs passion towards the league, passion in any direction, is good for the NBA. Like, people thought that LeBron James at the first time when he went to the Heat and teamed up with Bosch and Wade, people said that's bad for the NBA. It's not bad for the NBA. Now we look back on that, the decision, we talk about that is what kind of revived the league and generated so much more interest 6 years later. Think about how much more interesting the NBA is the last 6 years than it was from 2004 to 2010 before LeBron did the decision.
The Warriors went 73-9 this season. Ratings were through the roof. Like, it was insanity. It's going to be even crazier next year. Like, when they play the Thunder or when they play the Cavs, the ratings are going to be, I mean, like, the kind of thing that we haven't seen since, I don't even know, but probably never. You know, game seven of the finals was, I think, the highest rated finals game in, like, over 20 years. Things are going to get insane. Like, if they put the Warriors against the Cavs as the opening night game this year, I mean, it's incalculable what the ratings are going to be for that game.
Oh, it will be completely ridiculous. And there are going to be so many big-time regular season games. You know, Durant's return to Oklahoma City is going to be huge. I mean, just think about it. You know, I was talking about, you know, what games. I'm going to end up going to road games next year. And we were talking about how to schedule out which road games I'm going to go. And we were saying, okay, you know, well, obviously I'd have to go to Orlando for Serge Ibaka. And, you know, we have to cover the Orlando Thunder game. And like, doesn't that feel like such an afterthought now? I mean, there are so many other things to be thinking about at this point. It's just amazing how much one personnel decision can completely change the landscape of really the league, especially from a Thunder perspective.
Oh yeah, and look, that's why, you know, it's the biggest free agency move obviously since LeBron in 2010. Like, even bigger than LeBron going back to Cleveland 2 years ago, I think.
Why do you say that?
Because, so when LeBron went back to Cleveland, you know, like he said at the time, you know, it was going to be a process. It was not going to be something that was fully formed and they were going to take the lead by storm and completely take it over right away, you know, like they did in Miami and like I think will happen with KD. You know, it was something where he was going and joining young guys who hadn't won anything yet and were going to take some time to mesh. KD is, you know, obviously one of the three best players in the league and is going to a team that just won 73 games last year and already had, like, the best on-court chemistry in the league. And now you're talking about adding a very unselfish superstar to that mix that, you know, in a very real way, papers over the only real issues that they had as a team that you saw come up in the finals last year. You know, the first one was, you know, an inability to create anything other than threes offensively over those last few games of the finals once, you know, Steph couldn't really, like push off quite as well to be able to drive to the basket as he could during the regular season. And that's not an excuse. Like, I hate when people say, like, oh, then it's an excuse. No, it's an explanation for something that happened. Like, it was clear that he didn't have the same burst going toward the basket. And that doesn't take away from the Cavs winning. It's just a thing. Like the year before, the Cavs didn't have Kyrie and Love, and that was just a thing that happened during the finals. Like, you know, it's not an excuse. It's an explanation. And, you know, the other issue I thought Golden State had was they didn't have really versatile enough options to throw at LeBron other than Iguodala. Now they can have Iguodala, they can have Klay, they can have KD, they can have Draymond. They have so many other things they can do than just having Iguodala and praying that they don't force a switch.
And a lot of those open shots that weren't going in from, say, Harrison Barnes are now going to be Kevin Durant's shots. And that is a very different thing.
It'll be easier to create shots in other ways because, I mean, you saw how much things got gummed up for them when Steph couldn't get to the basket off the dribble. That's a lot different now that KD is there. And look, his, you know, if you could say that he had any weaknesses in his game in OKC, the biggest weakness he had was shaking free off the ball to actually come and get it. Like, that's a lot of the reason why Russ wound up with so many games where, you know, he had such a lopsided number of shots more than Durant was because you know, Westbrook had the ball in his hands because he was the point guard, the guy that ran their offense. And sometimes KD just couldn't shake himself free. That will be much less of a problem with the two best shooters in NBA history on his team. Plus, like, the best passing big man we've seen since, like, Chris Webber.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be interesting from the Golden State perspective. Let's talk about from the Thunder perspective, because I'm sure that's what the majority of my listeners are going to want to hear.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is there's no way to spin this as a good thing for Oklahoma City. Where do you go from here if you're the Thunder? I mean, look, you have Westbrook free agent 2017. You have a bunch of 2017 free agents. A bunch of them they can retain because, you know, Robertson is restricted. Adams is restricted. The Thunder are almost certainly going to match on anything up to a max on Adams. So Adams is going to come back. The big thing right now is Westbrook, right? So I want to play a game. I want to play a game with you. Russell Westbrook's a free agent in 2017. The first thing they're going to do is they're just going to be pitching Russell Westbrook. Whatever Russell Westbrook wants, he's getting. Maybe they trade him. That's possible. I mean, look, the Thunder aren't going to want to lose Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant in back-to-back off seasons for nothing if Westbrook's going to leave. So maybe they do trade him and they get back a bunch of pieces because you can obviously get a ton even for 1 year of Westbrook. But what's your pitch to Russell Westbrook? You're Sam Presti right now. I want you to take Sam Presti's mindset, consume his body, take his Adam Levine haircut and his Russell Westbrook frames, and I want you to be Sam Presti and pitch Russell Westbrook on why he should come back to the Thunder on a long-term deal.
I will say, I do have the frame that Sam Presti has. I don't think we can get my hair to look like his, though.
Oh, I don't think we can do that.
Impossible.
I think that might be a challenge with you.
Yeah. In case your listeners don't know, I have a shaved head and have for 7 years. but the pitch has got to be, you know, this is your franchise now in a very real way that it hasn't been while you've been playing with KD. Like, it's always been sort of not necessarily a tug of war between them in actuality, but certainly in the public perception, it has always been KD's team. And, you know, you have to say to Russ, like, this is your chance to prove what you can do as the true leader of the franchise, not just the leader of the team, the guy that is the leader of the entire franchise. And, you know, obviously they'll give him any contract he wants, and they'll give him free run to run the team the way that he sees fit and to show off all of the different things that he can do. And you would think there will not be too many complaints about, like, oh, why isn't Westbrook passing to whoever these days now? It's going to be a chance for him to really do what he can do on a level that was just not necessarily not possible before, but not accepted before because of who he had as his teammates. Now, that said, if I'm Russ, I'm not all that interested in that pitch.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with what's going on with the Thunder right now. The Thunder have never really signed. I mean, not never really. They've never signed a big free agent. And their big pitch,
I think,
because
the biggest contract they've given out in free agency
is Kristaps
Singler.
No, it was Chris. Kyle Singler was. They retained Singler.
Oh, right.
The biggest is Nenad Krstić when he signed for.
And then it's Anthony Morrow.
And then it's Anthony Morrow. Yep, those are the two biggest in terms of total money that they give into another team's free agent. It's Nenad Krstić, which was 3 for 15.6, and Morrow, which was 3 for 10 with a non guaranteed third year too. And that's the most total money they've ever given out to another team's free agent. I mean, they.
Look, I will say this for Presti. I think the Ibaka trade looks a lot smarter now than it did at the time he made it. And I was one of the people that thought that it was pretty good at the time he made it. Now it's like, you know, they added, obviously, depth in terms of turning one guy into two. They added years of control because Ibaka was going to be an unrestricted free agent next year, and they have Sabonis for up to 8 or even 9 years if they want, and Oladipo, they obviously have matching rights on his contract next summer. You know, they could try to sign him to an extension right now as well. So I think that deal looks much smarter. Obviously, it doesn't look quite as smart in terms of convincing KD to stay, but it looks smarter in terms of, you know, they were probably going to lose Ibaka next summer if KD left this year, and at least they got something for him. And I really like the two guys they got for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I mean, you get 24-year-old Oladipo, who you can, you know, match on any restricted contract next year, and you get Sabonis, who's a rookie. I mean, the point that I was getting to before, though, was more that the Thunder have created a culture in which they treat players basically as well as any other organization in the league. I mean, they do everything they can. I mean, look, Enes Kanter wants a place where he can pray in the Thunder's practice facility, and Clay Bennett gave him his office. I mean, there are things that the Thunder do that are above and yeah. I mean, there are things that are above and beyond that the Thunder do for players that other organizations. I mean, look, there are other great organizations out there, and I'm not comparing the Thunder are better in this way, but in this way in particular, the Thunder go above and beyond, I think, than they do for other players, because they know that's their sell to free agents, and it hasn't worked in bringing in other teams' free agents. And I think part of that is because you don't really know it until you're there. That's something you can hear about, and it's something that players can talk about, and something that, you know, front office people can tell players, but you don't really know until it happens, and you think, oh boy, this is nice. And they've done an okay job in retaining guys, but I think the strategy, you could say, worked out if Kevin Durant re-signs. They haven't brought in any other free agents, but it works out if Kevin Durant re-signs. You know, it's the second smallest market in terms of DMA in the NBA. New Orleans is smaller. But in terms of the way it's viewed, it's almost looked at as the smallest market in the NBA. And if Kevin Durant re-signs, I think you can say that strategy was all worth it. Now, I'm not saying it's the wrong way to play it. I think they played it the right way. It just didn't work out. But they have to be wondering, I mean, like, man, what could we have done? I mean, I don't know if there's anything that they could have done.
I think there are plenty of things they could have done. They could have been willing to pay the luxury tax. They could have...
Oh, of course, from that perspective. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, you can go back and talk about Harden, where, you know, the narrative around Harden was that they couldn't re-sign Harden. They could have re-signed Harden. It's been documented a bunch of times. You can Google that stuff. I'm talking about from a culture.
About having, you know, nobody foresaw the massive cap spike coming, and that's not something you necessarily even could have possibly foreseen. But Clay Bennett has a boatload of money. He could have been willing to pay the luxury tax, and not just for Harden. You know, for guys on the mid-level exception that they haven't really gone out and signed over the last few years.
Yeah.
You know, they've been doing this thing where they turn their veteran guys into a couple younger guys so they can keep their costs down, and then they don't go out and sign veteran guys really to replace them. And from a business standpoint, it makes sense because it helps you turn more of a profit. It helps you save money. It makes you more efficient. And it even last season, I think, worked out well for them in terms of, like, you know, having a little bit of a deeper roster than they had before. But guys notice those things. And we've been talking about that with Durant and Westbrook ever since they made the Harden trade. Like, would they be okay with them cutting costs on the margins rather than giving them every possible chance? You know, just look at the difference between the way they've handled their supporting cast in terms of what they've been willing to shell out and what this time around Dan Gilbert's done in Cleveland with LeBron, sparing zero expense and just bringing in any possible guy that LeBron wants, no matter how much money it costs.
And, you know, this is a concept I'm going to touch on in an article I'll have out later Monday. But, yeah, I mean, I think part of the irony is that the Thunder actually – I mean, you're right that all of those things happened basically since Durant came into the league. At the same time, I think part of the irony is that the Thunder actually started to spend money in the last year. Now, they claim it was something they were going to continue to do and that they didn't care about paying a repeater tax. And if they were planning on keeping this roster together, then that's something to believe, because there was kind of no way that they could keep this roster together and not have to pay a repeater luxury tax. But they paid the fourth. Mark Stein just came out a couple days ago with the luxury tax numbers and the luxury tax bills for each team, and the Thunder paid the fourth highest luxury tax in the NBA this year. That's not them claiming something. I mean, that is a tangible shift in the way that they operate. Even if it's not yet at a repeater tax, that's a tangible shift. So I think they in some ways thought, you know, we have to – they weren't going to not spend money if it definitively meant not keeping Durant. They were obviously willing to risk in the beginning, but as it got closer, they weren't going to not spend money if it definitively meant not keeping Durant and not retaining Westbrook. And I think we did see some kind of change in organizational mentality in the last 2 years or so. It just might have been too late.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly looks like it was. And it's also, you know, I think people are papering over some of what, you know, Durant's, you know, the letter was not very long, but there was some stuff in there in terms of, like, expanding his horizons as a basketball player. You know, the Thunder have run an offense that made somewhat sense for their personnel during the time they've had Durant and Westbrook, because, you know, if you have two guys that are that talented, then it makes sense to set things up so that you can get them into a place where once they get the ball, they're able to just take their man one-on-one. But I think that it's clear that signing with Golden State, at least in part, is motivated by being able to play a different way and play a way that makes things a little bit easier. Not because he wants things to be easier, but I'm having a difficult time explaining what I mean. But makes things... Yeah, I mean, I guess it's...
He can play in a least in a less stressful fashion.
Shots. It's easier to come by looks when the ball moves around more. You know, and it's more fun, I would imagine, to play that way too.
Yeah. I mean, look, he can play in a less stressful fashion when he's playing in Golden State. I mean, I don't think that's a knock on the Thunder. I think especially in the playoffs, Billy Donovan did a really good job. I think it's just when you're playing with one of the most prolific and honestly most beautiful offenses, one of the most beautiful ones we've seen in, you know, the history of the NBA, things are just easier. And when you add an all-time player and an all-time scorer, it's that offense, man. I don't even know what they average. How many points per 100 they average this year? Like 114, right? Like,
if they had, look, adjusted to the league average, they had the best offense of the three-point era this season.
And it is going to be...
Number of points per 100 possessions better than the league average, and in terms of percent better than the league average, it was the best offense of the three-point era.
And they are going to be so much better.
Yeah, even just look, it's almost definitely true that they will finish with a worse record during the regular season next year, if only because they're not going to try for 74 wins. They're going to find, you know, more games to rest their guys. They're going to play those guys for fewer minutes because they're going to do everything they can to make sure everybody is healthy and rested going into the playoffs. But they're going to be situationally so much better than they were last year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, crunch time and anything along those lines. I mean, yeah, and I agree with you. I don't think they're going to have the same desire to go for 73, or I should say 74, if only because it's their own record.
Almost, they're not going to win 73.
I don't think that's a bold statement.
Even while they were one of the best teams we've ever seen, it took a whole lot of luck still to get there. Like, you look at that game they won against the Nets early in the year, the game they won against the Thunder where, you know, Durant had that turnover, you know, in the corner of the court and Steph hit those ridiculous shots. You know, there were games that they won that they probably shouldn't have won. And that was with them being one of the best teams we've ever seen. You know, it takes a whole lot of luck to get there. And they're just not going to try as hard for it. They saw, not necessarily they saw the consequence of it this year, but they saw this year that it doesn't matter to them if they don't win at the end of the year. So, you know, they're just, I just don't think they're going to go for it.
So how many texts have you gotten from Knicks fans about Westbrook? Because if I know Knicks fans, then I know that they are going crazy.
Like, all of them. Like, I'm getting texts, I'm getting G-chats. My dad is like, do you think the Knicks can get Westbrook next year? I'm getting G-chats, obviously, from other, like, Knicks writers, from Knicks fans. My friends from home and from school are all like, man, can we get Westbrook? He's got to go on and play with Porzingis. Like, and look, this goes back to what we were talking about before. I think you have to seriously consider trading Westbrook at this point, because if you don't get a firm commitment from him that he's going to be re-signing, you cannot lose both of these guys and get nothing back for them. You just can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, with they didn't get nothing back for Harden now because Steven Adams was part of that deal, and Steven Adams is a really good player. But at the same time, they took a while. They had nothing for him for a couple of years there, or conceivably nothing, because you have to wait for Steven Adams to develop. And it would just be such an outrageous disappointment within the organization if they lost Westbrook and Durant for nothing, if he's not going to commit to something. And keep in mind, like, if you're going to trade Westbrook, the time is within the next 2 months. I mean, it's not in February when you just can't get nearly as much. You trade him so that teams value
the next, like, week or so, or you know, maybe after summer league or something. Like, the time to start engaging is you approach him and try to get him to renegotiate and extend. If he doesn't want to do that, you try to get a firm commitment that he'll stick around next summer. And if you don't, I mean, you have to seriously start exploring it right away.
Right, and keep in mind, I just want to be clear that we are both of the mentality, like, if you can keep Westbrook, you keep Westbrook. He's too special of a player.
Oh, look, if there's any possible way you can keep him, you do that. That's option one.
Right. I mean, look, I think there are people out there who see so-and-so is leaving. I mean, you heard this with the Hawks, right? And the Hawks kind of, they had a weird offseason, or have had a weird offseason, I should say, but we heard this with the Hawks this year. It's like they won 62 years ago. They won 48 last year. They lost in the playoffs both times. They went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago. And we heard people saying the Hawks should just tear it down. Just trade everybody, tear it down, and start from scratch. You don't. And Zach Lowe at ESPN has used the Hawks as a specific example for this. But you don't just tear it down because you're not at a championship level at that point. Yeah, you don't want to be in the middle in the NBA. But at the same time, if you trade Westbrook for young pieces, the chance that any of those guys becomes Russell Westbrook is so microscopically low. When you have a player as special as Russell Westbrook, you hold on to Russell Westbrook if you can.
The Thunder are in now. They have a few young guys that can be pretty good building blocks for whatever their next team is. And, you know, Westbrook, you know, he's going to fetch more in a trade than anybody has in a long time. Like, and look, this is not the ideal situation for them. The ideal situation for them, obviously, is keeping Westbrook. But if you go to the Lakers and get, you know, D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, and then you're saying for the next 5 to 8 years, the core of your team is Russell, Oladipo, Ingram, Kanter, Adams, and Sabonis, that's not terrible. I think that could develop into something pretty good over the next few years.
You make a run at Allen Crabbe now?
Yeah, I mean, look, you got.
I think they should do that.
$20 in cap space.
Right, they've got $20 million in cap room or something like that. If they renounce Waiters, and they could honestly, they could re-sign Waiters and still find a way if they could get, you know, clear room with Willy Osova on a giveaway or something like that. You can still be able to match basically whatever Crabbe's market value is and re-sign Waiters and bring in both of those guys if the Thunder were to want to do it. I think Crabbe would be a good fit, honestly. Whether Westbrook's there or not, I think he would be a good fit. He's 24 years old. He's a good catch-and-shoot guy. He's not a bad defender. He can play on the wing. I think he's someone – and there aren't that many really good free agents left. Yeah,
now,
yeah.
They're going to have a spacing cramp with no KD there. You know, you have two non-shooters – in the backcourt, in Russ and Oladipo.
Right.
Adams doesn't have much range outside the immediate area of the basket. Neither does Kanter. You know, Sabonis has a little bit of a mid-range game. And Kanter can stretch to like 15, 18 feet or so. There were a couple times where he hit threes, but you don't trust him from out at that distance. You know, they definitely need somebody that can shoot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, also it would take away a little of the redundancy of having Oladipo and Waiters next to each other, or Oladipo and Westbrook next to each other. If Westbrook's there, you can have Kanter play the two, or have Kanter play the two. That would be something. You can have Crabbe play the two, and Oladipo
can come back. Putting centers at the two is what the Kings are going to do.
Yeah. No, the Kings are putting centers at the one. The Kings are playing that. They're taking someone from that All Star lineup when Shaq played point guard in the 2002 All Star game. That's what they're going for.
It might be their best point guard right now.
Hey, Boogie's got handles. He can go coast to coast. And he's a good passer, too. I mean, he's awesome. I love watching him. But I think Crabb would be a good fit if he wants to come here. Yeah. I don't know if, you know, he's restricted. So if the Blazers would want to match, it was, you know, there's been some speculation that if there's a number big enough for him, the Blazers wouldn't be willing to match on it. I know he's got a meeting with Brooklyn on Monday today. So that's something, you know, that would be an obstacle as well. But I think he's one of the best remaining free agents who hasn't come to a verbal agreement. You know, I guess someone could pull a DeAndre, and if that's the case, the Thunder could go talk to them. But I think the player would have to initiate that. The Thunder wouldn't initiate something like that. So really, I think something like Crabb would be the best move, whether you trade Westbrook or keep Westbrook, and you move on from there. I mean, with what's still a really young core. That's something that Presti has done, which has been good. He's made sure that their core has stayed young. Everyone stayed on the same timeline for the most part. And that will help in this situation.
Yeah, look, and if they don't trade Russ, I think they can still make the playoffs next year, provided they go out and sign. You
know, yeah, so Jared, how many, let's say they bring back this roster. Let's say they re-sign Waiters, and they bring back this roster. Maybe they bring in one other guy who can help. How many wins do you think this team has?
And anywhere between like 35 and 45 wouldn't shock me, depending on what happens with injuries and how guys fit.
Right. For reference, they won 45 the year that Durant played 20 some odd games and had the foot fracture.
They had Ibaka that year too.
That's true,
but part of it.
Oh,
and that's going to be, you know, with no Ibaka and no Durant, it's going to be tough for them to play high caliber defense.
The defense is going to be somewhat of an issue. You know, there's going to be a lot of a burden put on Steven Adams.
Yes,
I mean Steven Adams is a very good defensive player, and he was amazing in the playoffs. He's still 22 years old. Like, I think he's got all defense in his future. I think. I don't know if it's this upcoming year, but at some point in his life, I think he's going to be on an all-defense team. I really do think he's that good. He's that versatile. He can guard in so many different ways. He can get on the perimeter. He can switch onto guys. He's smart. He's good defending guards. He doesn't really leave his feet very often. He doesn't really get into foul trouble very often. He's a really good defensive player. He protects the rim, but that's a huge burden. I don't care if we're talking about, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green, DeAndre Jordan. Like, I don't care how high caliber defender we're talking about. This is a big burden to place on one guy's shoulders for talking just strictly defense.
Yeah, and look, they don't have as many guys that can cover as much space as they did a year ago. You know, Ibaka and Durant covered more space than probably anybody on their team.
Right. I mean, look, Andre Robertson is going to help. Andre Robertson is honestly, he's an improved defender from what he was 2 years ago. I think he used to be able to muscle him. I don't think you can really do that as much anymore. You know, I thought when even going into as recently as the Spurs series, I thought one thing Robertson was going to struggle with, I thought Kawhi was going to post him up a lot and he was going to be able to back him down. And Kawhi would either, they'd have to help maybe, and Kawhi would find guys for threes, or he would just score on Robertson or whatever it was. And I thought Robertson was really good. Even in those scenarios, guarding Leonard in that series, that's something he's certainly improved on. But you know, they're going to have two really good defenders in their lineup. Two really good defenders doesn't make a really good defensive team. So we'll see what happens. Adams is going to have to be really good for that defense to hold up for sure, especially if he's playing next to Ilyasova a lot.
Yeah, and you know, Oladipo and Robertson too. You know, Oladipo, he has an elite defender locked inside him somewhere, but I think he's mostly been good on defense so far in his career. And in his second year, I talked to him about it during the season. He said that in his second year, he was bad on defense, you know? And Scott Skiles and Oladipo both said that he got better again this year, and I think he was better this year than he was as a rookie. But he can do more, you know? He can clean stuff up off the ball. He can be a little more solid even on the ball. But especially the off-ball stuff is something I talked about with him last year, and he thinks he can really get better in that area, and he's going to need to.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Oladipo. Oladipo is the exact kind of guy who you think is a great defensive player and isn't. I think he's an above-average defensive player, and I think he certainly has the potential.
He's been good so far, but not.
Right. I mean, he's the definition of defensive potential. He'll get screened up every once in a while. He'll get caught in the wrong place every once in a while. He'll get caught gambling every once in a while. I think that could be a combination that could be a little bit detrimental if you put it next to Russell Westbrook, who likes to gamble a lot as well. It could just be even more for the back line guys to have to help on and recover on. From a complimentary standpoint, could hurt.
You have two guys like that and bake it into your defense that gambling is going to be part of your philosophy, where you're just going to try to jump every single passing lane. You're going to play up in your guys at all times. And because you know you're not going to be that good of a defensive team, you're going to base your defensive identity on trying to force turnovers and run the other way.
Right, and they're going to have an athletic group. I mean, Adams is a good athlete. Obviously, Russ and Oladipo could be the most explosive backcourt in the entire league. Robertson's a good athlete. Like they have an athletic group that could be able to run the floor and be effective that way. But we'll see how the rest of the roster turns out. There's still a couple more moves they can make. They have about $72 million on tap for next year without the cap holds and without Morrow's contract, which is unguaranteed until July 15th. So they're about $22 million. They can get $22 million under without eliminating anybody from their roster, essentially. They can make a move or two or even three and add some depth to this team and at least turn it into, I think they'll be a playoff team next year if all stands as is. If they trade Westbrook for young pieces or something like that, obviously, that's a different story, but as it stands now, I still think they're a playoff team next year.
If you're decided on making a trade, let's say he doesn't give you assurances and indicates that he's probably going to leave, who are you approaching?
You're approaching the Lakers for sure. I would approach Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota was another one I was going to say. I don't think you're approaching the Sixers. All of their guys that are worth something in trades are big guys. And you already have Adams, Kanter, and Sabonis.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota is something you could do. You could do, you know, they have Chris Dunn there. They have picks. They have Rubio. They have Wiggins. I mean, there are guys there that you could work in some kind of deal that would make sense. Who else are you thinking?
I mean, you could theoretically go to Boston.
Right, you could go to Boston and you can try to get those Nets picks and, you know,
Nets picks, even Isaiah Thomas. Like, if they're going to get Russ, they'd probably be willing to trade Isaiah.
Right, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, Nets picks. You know, you can talk about Crowder. There are a bunch
Crowder
of pieces there.
Brown.
Yeah, I mean, look, Crowder. I mean, Crowder could really help turn them into a good defense. Crowder is a really versatile
one. None of these things, obviously, are ideal, but there's it's tough to get. Like, you're never getting fair value for Westbrook. It doesn't exist. But you got to do as well as you can. Talking about, like, there aren't any team.
Jared,
a compelling match.
Jared, you're kind of cutting out right now, but I think we're going a little bit long. So I think before we go, I just want to know, is there anything you want to plug before we go?
Yeah, you know, just stay tuned to my Twitter. I'll have some pieces coming out over the next few days. I've been doing online personal site analysis of sort of mid to low tier free agent signings, quick reactions. That's, you know, guys that sign for, like, you know, $15 million a year or less, which these days qualifies as like mid to low tier free agent signings. I'll have stuff going up throughout the week, Bleacher Report, Vice Sports, maybe CBS, elsewhere. I am also one of the hosts for the Locked On Network. I do the Locked On Knicks podcast. We have reactions to free agency and stuff out there already. We'll have more podcasts throughout the week at some point. Not sure what they'll be about just yet, but we'll have them. And, you know, I'm on Twitter at JADubin5, where I have dumb thoughts on a lot of stuff that, if you like that kind of thing, you can look out for.
So many dumb thoughts.
And I've been watching a lot of movies lately, late at night, so I have thoughts on those too.
That sounded dirtier than I think you anticipated it to.
Oh yeah, well, I need something to do while I'm staying up waiting for free agency movies. So I've been watching a lot of, like, the Oscar-nominated movies from the last few years that I never got a chance to see.
Now, what's the best one you've seen?
I just watched Room with Brie Larson, which was good. Look, I waited a long time to watch that because I was under the impression that it was more about, like, you know, the physical and psychological torture of her than it actually was. You know, it was actually more about, like, the experience of her and her son getting out and how they adjusted to it. Mm-hmm. And that movie was incredible.
It was an amazing movie. She was amazing in that movie, too.
Oh, yeah. And the kid was, oh, my God. Like, yeah, that great. Kid, superstar.
Yeah, great. Anyway, I feel like Room is a proper movie to discuss while we're ending this, right?
Yeah, and look, the one I watched before that was another Brie Larson movie, was Short Term 12, and you know, even though Durant stayed with Oklahoma City for 9 years, I'm sure there are many Thunder fans who will wind up thinking it was a short term stay.
Yeah, it's I just hope Thunder fans don't. Look, I understand, especially with him going to Golden State and there's, you know, some sort of rivalry there. I understand that, you know, he's probably or very possibly not going to get, you know, 100% cheers when he comes back to Oklahoma City. And that's cool. But and that's sports. And I think Kevin Durant, I'm sure, was well aware of that when he decided on the Warriors. But at the same time, I think there's got to be some amount of appreciation for what Durant has done, even from an off the court perspective. Just donating $1 million for tornado relief.
$1 million for tornado relief. Like, this is not some guy that didn't care about Oklahoma City at all. Didn't do great things for Oklahoma City. I mean, he's been one of, you know, the most influential people in the city and the state for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, there are just so many good things he's done for the city.
They went to 4 conference finals with him. They went to an NBA finals. They've been one of the best teams in the league for 7 years. It's not like they got nothing out of having Kevin Durant on their team.
That's well said. And before we head out, just remember you can go onto iTunes to subscribe to the podcast. Just look it up. It's Locked On Thunder, and it's part of the Locked On Network. You can sign up for Jared's Locked On Knicks. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to the Norman Transcript, the website, normantranscript.com, for all your Thunder news. Check out Thunder Road. Just follow that. It's under the sports tab right there. You can get your Durant coverage there. I've already got a couple of articles up. There's going to be more coming. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, Locked On Thunder is locking up.